The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at coopradio.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Pulse on CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver Co-op Radio. I'm David Ball. You can find all of our previous shows and interview excerpts at thepulse.cooperadio.org or download our podcast wherever you get your favorite shows. Well, on our show today, we're looking at the reopening of schools in the downtown east side and across the province starting on September 10th. And today's guests are parents with the elementary school in the neighborhood serving the downtown east side, Chinatown and Strathcona. The Parents Advisory Committee at the Lord Strathcona Elementary is speaking with us today. We have the chair of that committee, Krista Sigurdsson, as well as the Indigenous rep, Jamie Smallboy. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Pulse on CFRO, and glad to hear from both of you as parents in this district that we live and broadcast in, and everyone in the catchment area for Strathcona School.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us.
So I wanted to start, we've just listened to parts of Minister Rob Fleming's back to school plan. Starting with you, Krista, could you kind of give some sense of, are you surprised by anything there? Is there anything that stood out for you?
Yeah, you know, at the outset, Minister Fleming made a comment about recognizing that some families might not be comfortable sending their child to school, you know, for a variety of reasons, and encouraging the districts to include those families in their restart plans. And, you know, I agree with this sentiment, but at the same time, it's not exactly a binding recommendation. So I think that stood out to me as sort of a message that he was promoting about how important it is to give families options. But in reality, the districts have a lot of say over what exactly that means. Anyway, I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the interview, but that's sort of a recurring issue.
That did strike me. His direct quote was, "We understand that many parents and caregivers are looking for more options. It is my expectation as Minister of Education that districts will work with families." And he encouraged people not to make a decision until they've heard from their district and see the information. But it doesn't sound like a directive, for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Jamie, I wanted to jump over to you. How do you feel? How comfortable do you feel sending your kids back? And what did you hear that stood out in the announcement today?
I don't feel comfortable sending them back at all. And I have various concerns as to why. So one of the things, like, I agree with what Chris is saying and what you're saying. There's no real directive. It's a pretty vague bunch of words that he's giving. There's no real, oh, what is that word? I just had it. I apologize. There's no real guarantee that moving forward that our children will be in the best possible situation that they could be as required to attend school. The ventilation is a problem. Like, that's a huge problem. My children attend Lord Strathcona, and, you know, due to the budgets being what they are, a lot of the windows were so repainted that they're painted shut. So if you're going to be putting, you know, 22 to 28 students, how are they supposed to social distance? I get that he says, you know, the parents are supposed to keep an open mind, the districts will be in contact, but like Krista said, that's a lot of pressure to put on the districts, and I believe that's a lot of pressure to put on the educators as well.
Yes, and I think, I wondered if you could talk, Jamie, about your situation. What happened in March when they closed the schools down? I understand you have a number of children. How old are they, and what schools do they attend?
I have five children. They all attended Strathcona. The age group now is 9 to 17. I have two that will be attending Strathcona, one going to Britannia and two in Wycliffe. And when the schools closed in March, it was a disaster. I live in the downtown east side, but because of how living here, you have to venture out to neighboring communities to access stores like Superstore or Walmart. But the hoarding that was going on here was so bad, I chose to bring my children back to our reserve, which is in Alberta. And the access to the internet was insane. You have Wetaskiwin, you know, that's the neighboring town, and they have high-speed internet, and they pay about $70-$75 a month for internet. A lot of the families that I know that lived in Wetaskiwin, they did not have the problems that we did on the reserve. They filter out their internet to our reserve, and we're paying like double what they pay, and it's like watered down version of what they get in Wetaskiwin. So even trying to download or open an email was a challenge. You know, it would lag, it would time out. And when you're living in a house, like I, with me and my children, I was six of us. When you're living in a house with 14 people, any of them go on the phone, any of them get on the phone, good luck, you know, trying to get onto Microsoft Teams or trying to get onto Zoom. There was just no way. Thankfully, the staff at Strathcona, they went above and beyond, and they mailed packets of assignments for each of the children that attended there. That was the only way that I could give my children any kind of education during that school shutdown period.
You described it as being a disaster, and the staff's kind of exceptional role in this. This has really revealed, I think, how much teachers and school support people play a role in such an important task that many of us struggle to fulfill.
Yes, they showed incredible motivation on behalf of their students' educations and also on behalf of food insecurities. I was really touched by the amount of effort that Strathcona and the PAC that Chris is a part of put forward, you know, to make sure that the children not only had access to education, whatever possible way they could make that happen, but also to the food that was provided from Strathcona to the students. They did bagged lunches, they did drop-offs for, like, hampers and stuff.
So, I mean, what you're describing with the internet, I think is true in reserves and remote communities across British Columbia, not just Alberta, but I think also in our own neighborhood, it reveals such a class divide between lower income and middle and upper income people with access to high speed internet, perhaps. I mean, I'm having trouble today with my internet connection. We had to redo part of this interview even, so because the internet connection was bad. So it just seems like there's a bit of a choice that's being made here between, do you send your kids back to 100% in-class enrollment or struggle with internet issues and crowded homes and noise for the rest of the school term? It's a difficult decision.
It is a difficult decision, and I agree with you. Like, when I was living on the west, I guess where the postal code becomes West Vancouver as opposed to East Vancouver, I was paying, I think it was $78 for high-speed internet. Now that I've moved further into the east side, I'm getting horrible internet, as we've experienced as well during this interview. That would make it very difficult to have five children if, you know, if I chose to keep them at home, it would be very difficult to educate them because of where I live.
Krista, I wanted to go back to you. Tell me about what age are your kids, where are they schooling, and how was the March shutdown for your family?
So in many ways, I think that my family probably represents some of the more privileged positions, because my partner and I have flexible work, and we were able to spell each other off and take turns, you know, doing childcare and doing home learning with the kids. My kids are going into grade 6 and going into grade 2. And, you know, my partner is also in technology, so he could do a lot of troubleshooting and internet. You know, we revamped our entire internet program at our home. But, you know, not everybody can do that. And we have a joke in our family. We call it him our tech concierge, because he's always having to fix things and improve things. And honestly, I don't know what we would have done without that. Not to mention being a single parent and having, you know, more kids to teach. So we were very lucky. And even though we were so lucky, it was still really, really, really hard, you know, emotionally and just psychologically. Both of ours are at Strathcona.
How did the education aspect of it go? Because one of the things that Minister Fleming said today was that a lot of parents told them in their survey they sent out that they simply were not able to be teachers to the extent that professionals could do that job.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I mean, we went through all the range of experiences with our kids, and there were many times where they refused to do any kind of education from us. You know, in my mind, in the ideal world, what the elementary schools would offer in Vancouver would be some sort of blended model where kids would be offered the opportunity to go back to school full-time if that's what their family needed, and also the opportunity to go back part-time and do some of that transitional work at home. Because I think, you know, in my experience anyway, I think my kids would do really well if they had some, you know, regular in-person contact with teachers and kids, but then also some home learning. I think that blend would actually work really well, and it would mean that the schools would be less full. They'd have more ability to physically distance, et cetera, et cetera. And I just, for many parents, the fact that that option hasn't been offered until maybe now. I sent you that survey that went home, and there's this now option 4, which is being considered, which may include some sort of hybrid learning. You know, it's very frustrating because I think that for a lot of parents, that would be an option they would consider. And I don't think anyone would say, or at least I wouldn't say, that that should be the only option, because that's not going to work for a lot of families. A lot of families need their kids at school full time. And it's safe to be full time, especially if the classes are smaller and there's more ability to physically distance. Anyway, my point is, that would be my dream scenario.
So with what the province is promising, are you assured as a parent yourself that they have followed all the guidance to keep the kids and their families and their elders safe?
You know, to be honest, it really depends on what happens with this. Was it $4 billion that just came in from the federal government?
Yes.
You know, if the school can use that money, if the schools can use that money to, you know, develop outdoor learning opportunities, to hire more online support so that there can be some sort of blended option for kids who can stay home part-time, then absolutely, I have a lot of confidence. But, you know, school's in like 10 days, so, or maybe 2 weeks, I suppose. So that's pretty quick to make these big changes. So, you know, I saw on Twitter some sort of criticism around, like, well, this money is coming so late. How are schools supposed to do so much work within 2 weeks? And I understand that. But also, on the flip side, it's very unusual for the federal government to invest money in education. So this is kind of amazing. So there's sort of both sides to that story. And I think it's just putting the districts in a really difficult situation. They have this opportunity now to make some really big changes, but it has to happen within 2 weeks. So I don't know how I can answer your question. I mean, if the schools were to open as planned without another sort of blended option, without more physical distancing assured, I don't think I'm entirely comfortable, to be honest. But if those things can happen with this money, then I would be a lot more comfortable.
It puts parents in a very, very difficult and stressful situation. I mentioned earlier just about having to choose between the parents' mental health and ability to make an income, and the kids' mental health and social life and their ability to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think there are kids who need to be with other kids and need to be with their teachers, not with their parents, because it's causing all sorts of problems at home for kids and parents. And, you know, the fact that the schools are moving towards, you know, reopening full-time for elementary, I know that that reflects that. They have listened to that feedback from parents that being at home with kids, doing all the education, trying to work has been a disaster for so many families. So I really do feel like they've heard that, but they also need to hear the other part, which is, you know, parents also want physical distancing. They don't like this inconsistency that these learning pods of 60 kids are potentially not going to be physically distant from each other. They don't, I mean, parents don't like that. They like, you know, very clear rules for kids. And, you know, I think Minister Fleming was asked a question about that today, about how do you feel that, you know, we're being told to not to, to physically distance in the community all the time, playgrounds, and all of a sudden you don't have to physically distance from your pod of 60. And, you know, he's getting kind of pushed on that because I think that parents are sort of seeing that and you know, it's they want to know more, and they want the school districts to do everything they can to keep kids physically distant. Even if the science shows, you know, that there is some safety in a smaller number, we just want our families to be safe. We just want more than the minimum put into this.
Jamie, your thoughts?
Well, you're looking at, I mentioned earlier in the recording that we got cut off, like Fleming says something along the lines of, we share the same concerns to support kids no matter where they're learning from. Now, a lot of the parents that I've talked to here at Stamp Place, they feel as though their children, and I will quote one of them, are being used as guinea pigs. They're sort of testing the COVID water, like what Chris just said. You know, the rest of the community, there's things in place to keep social distancing going on, but that's not going to happen in a classroom. That won't. So our thoughts are, like, the decisions are being made by officials that are living in a higher comfort level with access to more resources and, you know, obviously more space than the average family. So what seems so simple up there where they're sitting is far different than others who struggle to provide basic needs for their family, you know, the average family in downtown Eastside. Now, you look at a lot of the parents that I spoke to, they're like, well, I guess if we have no choice, we'll send them, but they're reluctant to. They're reluctant to because they're afraid of their children. There's no way to track or monitor who the children are in contact with outside of the school environment. Like when they go home, you know, who are they in contact with at home and who are they in contact with? There is no way to monitor that. So that, for myself, gives me a lot of anxiety because I'm very strict about who enters my home. I'm very strict about taking my children anywhere. So that's not present, that safety net that I have the control of my home and who my children are interacting with is not present at school, even though the staff were there to try to keep that social distancing going on there. It still doesn't prevent the children from going home and being in contact with other people and then coming back to school. So that's one part. The other part is a lot of the parents are afraid if they choose not to send their children to school, will there be government involvement because their children aren't going to school?
You mean from like MCFD?
Exactly. That would be one of my concerns because I just fought for several years to get my children from foster care. Now that I have them here, do I have to send them to school and put them at risk just so there is no involvement from child welfare? That's kind of a black or white area there for me. And then you have the parents that have their children at home, would rather have their children at home, but because they have to go out and get day jobs, for example, it would be a lot easier for them to acquire their basic needs of life, like, you know, food, putting money towards their rent if their child was in school. But again, there's that uncertainty of how safe is that really for our children.
You've talked about some real big social equity kind of issues here, and I'm thinking that for a lot of the families living in the downtown east side of our listenership, and especially Indigenous ones, we're looking at a lot of people living in more crowded contexts, whether it's larger Indigenous families or in housing cooperatives or in BC housing apartment buildings. It's very difficult to contact trace in an environment where the kids might be running free in a courtyard or an apartment.
That's my point exactly. There is no way of tracking or monitoring that. So we're sending our children to, you know, back to school like everything's normal, but everything is not normal. Yes, they may be putting these things, these options on these stages in place, but at the end of the day, there's still a virus out there.
Krista, over to you. What do you want to see to get more assurance that it's safe to go back to school as a parent and also as a parent who's elected to kind of represent the concerns of parents in Strathcona and downtown Eastside and Chinatown that are the catchment area?
Yeah, well, you know, I really appreciate everything Jamie has said. And, you know, I think it reflects the various needs of different people in the community, that there's not going to be one solution that's going to fit every family, because people have different resources at home. They're living in different circumstances, and what I would like from the district and from our school is a model that recognizes the multiple needs and situations of different families. Because if, you know, what we sort of have so far at the elementary school level is one model for all families. And I don't think it takes into account the different situations that people are in. And that will harm people both in terms of safety and in terms of educational opportunity and in terms of the things that Jamie's talking about around ministry involvement. I mean, that's a huge issue for many families at our school, and they would want to know, like, what does this mean? The options given to us by the district, and there's this new option 4, which is that, you know, they're considering a model where kids who don't go to school will have some direct contact with the teacher, or they're calling it a check-in, but it's not going to be your teacher at your school, and it's not going to be your teacher that teaches in the language you learn at school. So if you're in like a Mandarin immersion program or a French immersion program, it's not going to be in that language. So it really is like a break from your regular school program and a check-in, not like normal lessons or anything. So, you know, they're sort of moving towards offering some flexibility, but it really is quite lackluster at this point. And, you know, what I would wish for is really acknowledging the diverse needs of kids and families in Vancouver and BC and starting there rather than one model for everybody.
I wanted to thank you both so much for your time, so much of it today. And I think a lot of parents have many of your thoughts on their heads right now.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and thank you for having us.
Thank you. Take good care and stay healthy.
And that was members of the Parents Advisory Committee at Lord Strathcona Elementary, Chair Krista Sigurdsson, and Indigenous Rep Jamie Smallboy. If you want more information on the province's back-to-school reopening plan and the safety of students, you can find their website at gov.bc.ca/safeschools. That's gov.bc.ca/safeschools.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.